Hey, it's Farnoosh, and if I had to go back to my 19-year-old self and share her my one big piece of financial wisdom that I've learned in these 25 years, it's this. You can't save your way to wealth. You can't save your way to a comfortable retirement. You have to invest your money. Luckily, I got started in my early 20s. I learned that lesson early on, and I want to share the wisdom. I want to share what I've learned over these last 20-plus years investing in the stock market. I don't pick stocks. I don't pay lots of money to work with experts, and I've amassed a seven-figure portfolio slow and steady. I'm teaching my very unsexy tricks on Monday, April 29th, live at 3 p.m. Eastern. Go to sowmoneyworkshop.com to learn more and save your spot. Go to sowmoneyworkshop.com and sign up for my investing masterclass. Even if you can't make it live, everyone who registers will get the recording.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with tap to pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 772, Jacqueline Johnson, founder of Create and Cultivate, as well as Work Party.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
What do Gloria Steinem, Kim Kardashian, Jessica Alba, and Chrissy Teigen all share in common? Well, you've got to meet our next guest to find out. Welcome to So Money, everyone. I'm your host, Farnoosh Torabi. Today, we are in conversation with Jacqueline Johnson. She turned a job layoff into an incredible career comeback as an entrepreneur. And her business, Create and Cultivate, now hosts the premier conference for female entrepreneurs. Women love her conferences because she brings in female powerhouses, a few that I just mentioned, as her keynote speakers, and she creates an atmosphere of camaraderie that can't be beat. Today, we'll be talking about how she started her business, the days of being an intern making $18,000 a year, what it's like to meet so many incredible celebrities, and her latest project, an upcoming book and podcast called Work Party. Here's Jacqueline Johnson. Jacqueline Johnson, welcome to So Money. How are you?
I'm so excited to be here. I'm good.
This is a busy time of your life and year for you. You've got, obviously, Create and Cultivate is killing it, but also you have a book launching. You have a podcast. I think you also recently got married. My goodness.
I just do everything at once. And that's totally insane.
Just jam pack it all in.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, relative to other years, was this kind of like a busy year or like an average year?
It's been a wild year. I mean, I think the past 2 years actually have been sort of a roller coaster, both personally and professionally, which is awesome. And I'm sure, as you know, like when you get this kind of momentum, it's like you ride it out as much as you can. And you know, you're kind of like hashtag blessed to have this kind of excitement. So I'm enjoying every minute of it.
Yeah, you can always sleep in 2019, I suppose.
Precisely.
I love your story because it starts out where a lot of us start out, which is an internship or two or three, and big dreams, big hopes. And so take us back to when you were making like $18 an hour, because that's also something that I share with you. I made $18 an hour at my first magazine job in New York, which is no feat, no small feat. Did you have these big aspirations back then? Are you surprised to see where you are today? And two, sidebar, how did you make $18 an hour work in New York City? Or sorry, $18,000 a year, which is less than $18 an hour. It's like $9 an hour.
Yes, yes. I mean, and this is also a while ago, but yeah, 100%. So I think for me, the one thing that stands out about myself and growing up and all these things, and I'm sure my parents and friends could attest to, is I love working. Like, I genuinely loved building a career, internships, trying new things. Like, I always was like pedal to the metal, driven by careers and success and all of these different things. And so I've always sort of been that way. Now, when I was first starting out, I wanted to be a magazine editor. I was like, you know, obviously I saw all the rom-coms we saw growing up, all these things. And I was like, that looks fabulous. That's what I'm going to do. And, you know, did all the right things. I went to journalism school at NYU. I studied magazine production. I interned at Condé Nast. I made all the moves you need to make to do that. And honestly fought my way through. Like I talk about in the book, you know, my parents are car dealers in Florida. They have zero connections to like the bustling big city of New York. I had no ins, I had no relationships, I had no contacts. And I literally just like worked my butt off to get any sort of connection and intro. And I actually interned at a PR company, a small PR company, under this woman, Caroline Andoja. And she, I mean, it was one of those things where it was her and I think a co-founder, and it was the two of them out of her New York apartment, but big clients. And, you know, I was all of 18 and just like basically helping run that company was obviously a great boot camp in working under self-made, you know, entrepreneurial women and seeing their hustle. And luckily one of them went on to work at Condé Nast, and I sort of weaseled my way in with an internship because obviously that internship program is very difficult to get into. And then eventually obviously coming out of it was offered this job. So I was so excited. I mean, you know, dreams come true, editorial assistant, at Allure. It was like amazing. And then when I heard the salary, it was one of those things where I kind of had to give myself a reality check. You know, I didn't obviously have a trust fund, and, you know, coming out of college, it was really, really difficult. And I actually had to turn down that job because I just couldn't make it work. I remember telling, you know, the HR team, I was like, I can make this work. I'm going to work on weekends. I'm going to work at nights. And they were literally like, no, no, no. Like, you'll work weekends and nights at this job. But they were like, you'll get so many clothes and makeup. And I was like, I can't eat makeup. So
makeup doesn't feed my 401k. Sorry.
Exactly. So it was devastating, you know, obviously, because it was such an exciting opportunity. And I quickly had to pivot into a different type of job. And that's how I kind of got my start in marketing and advertising.
Fast forward, you launched your business, which is, well, it's not part of Small Girl, but Small Girl's PR, but No Subject, yes. Right? Kind of Explain what that was. It was like a PR agency, branding agency. Again, something that you started in your 20s. I think that's so admirable. You did it after a layoff too, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. And so No Subject had many iterations. So basically when it first started, which was a long time ago, it was a social media marketing agency. So this is like peak social media timing when everyone and every brand is like, I need a Facebook page. I need to update it. We need to be sharing content. And I basically was like, I know how to do all that. And at that time, there wasn't that many people offering that service. So social media agency out the gate. Soon realized a couple years in, like, this is really difficult to scale. It's really difficult to hire against. You know, more and more brands were like, we want to do this in-house. So then I pivoted into more of an influencer marketing agency, focusing on working with influencers. Again, peak influencer timing. and then eventually went into more experiential and events. So that company had a lot of different lives, a lot of different service lines, like over the 7 years I ran it, and then eventually sold it to Small Girls PR. But yeah, it was amazing. And it was honestly happenstance. I had no business plan. I essentially was laid off, like you said, reached out to my network as you do when you're looking for work and kind of said, does anyone know anyone who needs services that I can provide? Started with a few clients, started with a few more, eventually hired employees, and eventually grew it to what it became.
And on the side, because, you know, you weren't busy enough, you launched Create and Cultivate, which is this incredible conference that brings together women of all kind and headlined by people like Gloria Steinem, Issa Rae, Chelsea Handler, Jessica Alba, the list goes on. And it's just like the sort of thing that, like, can you imagine, it sells out within hours. When you first got the seed of the idea for Create and Cultivate, where do you even begin to say, like, I'm going to bring together all these badass women? Did you, at this point, I know you didn't come from a lot of connections, but at this point, did you feel like you had a nice Rolodex that you were leveraging to do this? Or did you also have to kind of start from scratch for this kind of a conference?
I had a decent Rolodex, and I would say the way I started was small. So basically the first Create and Cultivate, which like most people don't even know about, was a very small blip on the radar. It was about 50 women in Palm Springs, and I had, on the side of running No Subject, kept my blog. So I had this blog going. I had a little bit of a following there. I was able to like sort of monetize that as like a side project, but mostly used it to meet other bloggers and influencers. So I had this great sort of network of up and coming influencers and bloggers who are now like superstars. But essentially I was like, hey guys, I'm thinking of doing this thing in Palm Springs. It's going to be a day of workshops and talks and you know, cocktails and dinner and all this stuff. And, you know, I kind of want to use you guys to teach workshops and host, you know, conversations. And so luckily I was able to really leverage that and get together a really amazing group of women to kind of host these things. Obviously this isn't Kim Kardashian, but it was amazing women willing to lend their time and their expertise to other women. And so it was very small and very informal. And I never in a thousand years thought I would ever do it again. It was like a one and done in my mind. But I was like, that was so great and amazing. And I got to meet all these awesome women. And basically what happened was people just kept asking about it. Like, when's the next one? Brands were interested. It got that kind of organic momentum that you can't look away from and you can't ignore. And that's when I was like, okay, maybe we should try this again and maybe do it a little bigger. And then from there, it was like incremental growth until about 3 years in when it really exploded.
So take us to where Create and Cultivate is today. It's not just a series of events. This is a real business and brand that you're building. And of course, the book and the podcast are offshoots of that. But what is your goal ultimately with Create and Cultivate mission?
Yeah, I mean, the mission for Create and Cultivate is to entertain, enlighten, and inspire women to create and cultivate the career of their dreams. So whether that's as an entrepreneur and building your own business, or whether that's using your entrepreneurial spirit to build your career in the corporate world, we want to provide the tools, tips, and tricks you need to be successful. And the way that manifests itself is like through three different channels for us. So it's community and offline experiences, it's content and digital, and then it's going to soon be commerce and products next year, which is really exciting. So we're sort of figuring out the ways where we can kind of provide value to our audience through different channels. And then obviously we have the podcast and the book as well.
Anything you guys are doing on the money circuit?
In terms of like content or?
Yeah, content, empowerment, education. How important is the money piece to these women who are out there trying to build their careers?
It's the most important piece. I mean, truly the number one question we get at conferences is, hand up, how do I raise money? And I think that's like a really interesting conversation. And we've had amazing VCs and experts and things like that come to the table and really provide that real talk information you need to know about raising money. The second biggest question we get is around negotiation. How do I know how much to charge? How do I know when to push back? How do I ask for that raise? All of those questions. So, and for me, I love talking about money. I mean, I always say women should not think of money as a four-letter word. I mean, we really have to be able to speak about money, talk about money, and empower women who are making money versus hating on women who are seeing success and thinking it takes away from your success.
Work Party is the new kind of forward-facing brand. It's the name of the podcast. It's the book. Why? It's a really cool name. How'd you come up with Work Party?
Thank you. Yeah. Well, it was really funny because essentially the Create and Cultivate internal like vibe is like we're throwing these parties every like 6 months, essentially. They're a ton of work. And there are a lot of things that go into it. But essentially, it's a work party. It's a giant celebration of women coming together, empowering one another, sharing knowledge, and really going out and manifesting that in the world. And so we had this idea of like when you think about Work Party, at least for me, or like when I look back, it's like this boring party you have to go to. It's like a holiday party. Oh, it's a work party. So we wanted to flip that on its head and really reimagine what a work party can be. So saying that you can go out and create and cultivate the career of your dreams. Oh, and guess what? You can have fun while you're doing it. Because truly, like I look back on my life and my career, and I never in a million years when I was 12 years old thought, I'm going to run a female empowerment platform. Like I would never think that was a job. I mean, I was like lawyer, doctor, astronaut. Those are the things you think of when you think about businesses or building a career, especially when you're younger. But now it's really, I joke because I'm like, now being a content creator is a job. Now being a podcaster is a job. Now being all these amazing things that you can do on your own is a career. So it's really flipped its head, flipped the career on its head in that version of like, oh, work is like work, whereas work can be fun.
Work can be fun. Yeah. Is there something else you wanted to say?
Oh, no, that's it.
Okay. You're just taking a sip of water because that was a lot. all right. Let's transition to some So Money questions for you, Jacqueline. I love having these trailblazing women on the show. I think you're going to be able to really inspire so many of us more than you have already with your money journey. So let's kick it off with your number one, like, approach to money. Like, do you have a financial philosophy or a money mantra that guides you with the way that you manage your own personal finances?
Yeah. So I always say I'm pretty conservative when it comes to money. So my mom is an accountant. And so I grew up with like the overarching accountant mother who was always concerned with, you know, what our credit scores were when we were like 13. So I've been around in like that kind of money conversation since I was really young. But for me, what always has really stuck with me is what my mom said. She always was saying, you need to be independent in your finances and be able to always support yourself at any given moment. So I always took that very seriously. And so for me, saving was a big part of my story. But also, I would say I'm very big on money in, money out. So the reality of things, and it's like very basic, is I always want to be making more money than I'm spending, which feels like duh. But it's something that people don't really think about. You know, they don't budget. They don't think about things in terms of like the money in, money out the door. But I think about that very specifically when it comes to my business and my personal life. And I want to be hitting certain thresholds along the way to make sure I'm saving for what can be down the line, like a future that I'm not just like scrambling to make things happen.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras.
It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a double A or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15.
What did you do when you actually started to make more than $18,000 a year? Because it was a big jump, right? You were kind of, and you left that job, but it was, I read that you made six figures in your early 20s and then that you sold a company and made even more than that, like triple, quadruple that. So at some point, your tax bracket changed. And how did that immediately kind of alter your financial life, if at all? Because I remember, I'll be the first to share that when I first started making six figures in my 20s, I was like 27, 26, after basically doubling my salary, like I got so excited. I started to obviously think about where I would put that money to save, but I got so excited as far as like what kind of clothes I could buy now, clothes that wouldn't deteriorate. I didn't have to go to H&M. All the time, I could actually like buy like a real suit or a real pair of black heels. And that just made me feel like I'd made it, even though I should really feel more like I've made it when I see money in my brokerage account.
That's, right.
But you know what I mean? You're 26. That stuff excites you.
Oh, totally. And like legitimately, so I started when I was in my corporate career, like the corporate phase of my life, I started making a lot of money really quickly. So I doubled in salary pretty much over like three times over 2 years, only because I moved positions, which we all know about. And so I moved into different companies. I also had a very specific skill set. So I was an expert at, you know, quote unquote, social media. And this is in 2008 when no one else knew about this. I was sort of first to market in that realm of employee. And so brands saw that, they capitalized on it, they saw the campaigns I was doing, and I moved up very quickly. My parents legitimately thought I was a drug dealer. They were like, we don't understand why you're getting paid this much money. Like, what is this company? And I was like, I swear it's legit. Like, they were just so confused. But the reality was, it was really exciting. And I remember my biggest like money move I made was, and to this day, it's the thing I spend the most money on, was like real estate. So I remember I moved into a really nice apartment in New York. I mean, you know, it was a studio, but still it was a doorman building, which is like upgrade life in New York. But it was a big deal for me because I had been living in a one bedroom mice infested place for my whole life in Union Square. That was pretty nasty. And I just was like, you know, hustling my face off in New York. And it was one of those things where I remember just signing that lease and obviously being horrified at how expensive it was. But it was like, I felt so empowered that I could do something nice for myself. Like, and to this day, like that's the exact same thing I did when I sold my company. I bought a house. So it's funny because like, that's how I really think about spending. I'm not like a big spender on clothes. I'm not a big spender on those type of things. I mean, I probably should be more. But for me, what excites me is like, how do I use this capital to reinvest and make more money in the long run?
Your parents must have done something right. Right? I mean, maybe it's in your DNA, but I wonder if also you had some good learnings growing up. Our sponsor, Chase Slate, has done a survey looking at the kind of like discussions families have around money with their children. And they did find that over half of parents have had a conversation about money with their kids recently. So what may have been a real important life lesson for you learned early on, thanks to either the examples that your parents led with or the actual, you know, lessons when they sat you down and told you about something money related?
Yeah, I mean, I really have to credit my mom. But one of the things she did early on in teaching my sister and I about money was she opened a credit card for us, I believe, when we were 14. So we opened a credit card, and every month she would make us get gas once a month with a credit card for her. We'd use our own credit card, we'd put it in, and then we'd like pay off that, I don't know, $30 it was every single month. And she was showing us and building our credit along the way why that was so important. And to this day, I have incredible credit because I've taken those things and applied them to my life throughout it. But I started really early. And it was one of those things where I had three jobs in high school. I always was working and saving money. And my mom would always show me, hey, this is how much you made. This is your play money, and this is what you can spend, but here's what's going in your savings. And so I've always been taught from such a young age to save, 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 save. It's so important. And I think that comes from the fact that, one, my parents are entrepreneurs. They own a business together. So I've seen that like hustle lifestyle and known it for so long. And two is that my mom was always very conservative with money. Like, I always joke because I remember the first time I bought something from a mini fridge, and like the guilt of my mom, like, coming over, stay at hotels growing up, she was just like, don't touch the mini fridge. And it was so funny because I was like, I can afford this $4 water or whatever. But it was things like that where we were always very careful about money. She always wanted us to be able to, especially my sister and I, be able to always, no matter what the situation, be able to walk away from a bad situation and be able to support ourselves financially.
And these days, you literally cannot touch a mini fridge because it is activated by motion. So yeah. I got charged once for like $8 for a Diet Coke that I did not even touch because like I walked past the mini fridge and it rattled. But I think we can all relate to that mini fridge story. And to this day, I don't care how rich you get. No one's like, if you're paying $18 for cashews, you have not made it. You've lost your mind.
Yeah.
That's a problem. Tell us about, so we kind of did get a glimpse into your so money moment. Perhaps that was when you got to get the apartment that didn't have the rats in it. But even with like, well, so when you first started to feel like Create and Cultivate was capturing a lot of momentum, what was the first sign of that? And what do you think it is about your events in particular that women can't get enough of? Because there are a lot of different kinds of conferences and events for women, by women, that go on all the time, all year. Yours has really differentiated itself, not only in like the women who are so excited to attend, but the kind of people that you attract to the stage is unprecedented, unparalleled. So maybe I just answered my own question, but what do you think is the secret sauce?
Yeah, secret sauce. Yeah, no, totally. I mean, I think it's a combination of things. So when I was running my first company, a lot of what we did was we created and executed influencer events. And so we've all seen these on Instagram. They're super lavish, super luxe, really beautiful. And what I realized was so many women who weren't influencers were commenting, oh my God, that looks amazing. I wish I could go to something like that. All these things. And what I realized it was, why isn't someone throwing these type of events that are beautiful and fun and amazing, but also educational and valuable for women? And so what I did was I really applied that model to I took that influencer model and applied it to a consumer model. And when I really look at Create and Cultivate, I wanted it to be a full 360 experience. So a couple weeks before the conference, I sit in a room with everyone. I say, walk me through my experience as an attendee. Walk me through registration. Walk me through when I have to go to the bathroom. Walk me through when I have to do all these things from soup to nuts. And I want to make sure they have a premium experience. And the reality is we always try to keep ticket prices as low as possible because I really want to give this access to women, and which is also why we do free events, because it's really not about capitalizing on our audience. It's really about bringing in brand partners to subsidize, make these experiences great. But when it came to the panelists, I really wanted a wide range of women. I didn't just want content creators. I didn't just want celebrities. I didn't just want CEOs and executives. I wanted a full range of women that could provide a like overarching story and narrative that can be applied to any type of business. So I wanted you to hear from really successful CEOs. I wanted you to hear from marketing executives, but I also wanted you to leave feeling inspired and hear from these like mega, mega stars, but also incorporate and talk about political issues and diversity and inclusion and equal pay and all these difficult issues. And I think there's no reason why you can't have fun. It can't be beautiful. It can't be like an amazing experience. Oh, and also talk about business, talk about money, and talk about these difficult topics. And it's something that men have a very hard time wrapping their head around. I mean, they see a pink book cover, they see a pink stage, they see Kim Kardashian, and they're like, that's not business. And I'm like, no, this is a real business. The women attending have real businesses, and the women speaking, guess what? They have real businesses too. And it's something that I've really pushed to the forefront, and women obviously get it. But it's funny because it still has that like stigma attached to it. But we've really pushed through, created a name for ourselves. And I think, you know, we're just focused on our girl, our woman, our attendee, and making her life better.
All right. Okay. Tell me a failure, a money failure that you've had that was extremely important to go through because it's now really prevented you from more mistakes of the kind.
Yeah. I mean, I think like some of the, I would say the most prominent money failures I had is something that like a lot of people can relate to. So when I first started out running my first company, obviously like you're just like, I need to get money in the door. Like I need to get rolling. And I did a lot of handshake deals. I didn't wait for contracts to get signed. I was like, they're going to do it. Let's do it. Let's start on the work. Let's get going. And then push came to shove and things like happened and we didn't get paid. And I didn't have the paper trail to back it up. And those are really hard lessons to learn when you're first starting out because you're so eager. You want to be successful. You want to make the client so happy. But one of the biggest lessons I learned and the advice I give is get everything in writing, wait for the contract to be signed. Don't, you know, you don't have to rush it and you can be aggressive about getting that done before you do any work. And it was something I really, you know, regretted like and learned from when I was first starting my business.
Wow. So how bad was it? Was it the majority of your vendors or was it just a few vendors? Was it a trend?
Yeah, it was a handful, but there was a few people that we did a lot of work for and actually even had some signed contracts, but had to obviously bring in lawyers and then lawyers had to expedite this and that. And you're a small company and you're going up against these big, big clients. And it was one of those things where like social media didn't exist. I couldn't like put these people on blast. Like, you know, now there's like some site that my employees told me about where freelancers will report and talk about companies that don't pay. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so empowering and amazing because you can obviously share your stories. And now companies are like, we don't want to get on that site. But at the time, I was just some girl in downtown LA that they were like, I don't have to pay her. She can't do anything. And it was like, I didn't have the resources to pay a lawyer, you know, X amount of dollars. Like if they owed me $5,000, I ended up having to pay the lawyer $2,000. And then I'm like, what, is it really worth this $3,000? It was sort of that really tough situation to be in. But there was a few times I really fought and pushed back and was able to get paid, which was great. But there was a few times I lost out and it's a real bummer. And I think about those people quite often now that I have a little bit more success and a little bit of notoriety and recognition. And definitely always think back to, God, if I had the power I had now that I had then. But, you know, the only thing you can do is just warn other women about people like that. And honestly, any entrepreneur. And just kind of rub your success in their face. No, I'm just kidding. But
well, and you know, it's true that unfortunately it is a cost of business sometimes. Yep. You have to budget for the scammers.
Yep.
Unfortunately.
Pervasive. Like it really is a problem, but it's just for any freelancers out there or people going through it, it does happen, unfortunately.
Well, you took the high road.
Yeah.
All right, Jacqueline, let's round this out with our so many fill in the blanks. This is when I just start a sentence and then you finish it first thing that comes to mind. All right. If I won the lottery tomorrow, let's say you won $100 million, the first thing I would do is
I would love to start a fund to invest in female founders.
That's a great extension of Create and Cultivate and Work Party. I mean, why not? Like bring it back into the community.
Exactly. I mean, hashtag goals, but I mean, that is definitely something that I would love to do.
Awesome. I love that. Okay. Onto a good start. Okay. One thing I spend my money on that makes my life easier or better or both is?
A housekeeper.
Yes.
Like, the best thing that's ever happened to me, honestly, it's one of those like luxury expenses I use, but there's nothing better than coming home and having a clean house.
I just came home before an interview to a clean house. And it'll be destroyed within 24 hours though. Cause my kids, I mean, like, let's be honest, like 4 hours, I've already begged my son not to like throw out all of his toys onto the floor. Just give me like 30 minutes of enjoying the harmony that is the feng shui of my apartment for 10 minutes. Yeah, you'll see. You'll see what it's like one day. It's all good. Someone said to me, it's like The Messy Magnificent Life. Janine Roth wrote that book. Pick it up.
So true.
All right. One thing I love to splurge on that I am unapologetic about is
travel. Mm. I love to travel. I don't take a lot of vacations, but when I do, I really go for it.
But no mini bar.
Mini bar is off limit.
All right. When I donate, I like to give to blank because
Time's Up. So we have a partnership with Time's Up at Create and Cultivate, and me personally, and I just think it's so important right now. And it's so crucial to give to causes that obviously give back to the community.
I love that. All right. One thing I wish I had learned about money growing up is
it's really hard to get and really easy to spend.
Mm-hmm. All right. And last but not least, I'm Jacqueline Johnson. I'm so money because
I support other women.
Thank you so much for the work that you do, Jacqueline. We will be keeping an eye on future events with Create and Cultivate, but also your book and your podcast launched this week. Work Party is available everywhere. And I love the tagline. First we leaned in, now we stand up. It's such a great time to be a woman, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much.
To learn more about Jacqueline's upcoming book and projects, head over to workparty.com. You can also follow Jacqueline on Twitter at Jacqueline R. Johnson, also on Instagram with the same handle. If you missed any of this, don't you worry. You can just hop over to somoneypodcast.com and listen to the audio as well as read the transcript. And while you're there, if you've got a question for me, click on Ask Farnoosh and you can leave me a question there as always. And I'm hanging out on Instagram, folks. I don't know what you're doing, but spending a lot of time there answering your questions, posting behind the scenes, in front of the scenes. It's a ball. I would love for you to connect with me there. I try to answer things within, 24 to 36 hours. So if you've got a really important question that just can't wait, that's probably the best place to reach me, at Farnoosh Tarabi. Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with tap to pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.